Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This is Theology Thursday. Typically, we look at the news of the day from a Christian worldview. Today, we look at the source of the Christian worldview, God's Word. David's great-grandmother's name is Ruth. With this class, we begin our study of her book. Ruth, chapter 1, verse 5, then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband. That land of Moab was rough on men, I'll tell you that. And of course, that is true of every land. Life has always been harder on men than on women, physically speaking. We die younger. It's life's double standard. Even today in America, with all our increased standard of living, women outlive men by, what is it, about 8 years or so? Of course, also, more women have relationships with God than men do. Women are more relational, and as a result of that, they're more willing to consider and to have a relationship with God. And so, as it comes later in life and a woman loses her husband, she still has an eternal perspective, a woman who is a Christian, and God undoubtedly helps sustain her in difficult times, while more men, percentage-wise, often in their pride, they don't seek the Lord for help. And even though women far outlive men, that doesn't deter the feminist from accusing men of manipulating the healthcare system. You recall that those stories? They claim that men get better healthcare treatment than women do. But women live years longer than men. How much better could it possibly be? I never figured that out. And that reminds me of another of life's double standards and of the feminist claim of sexist discrimination as the reason why girls in school do not do as well as boys in math and science. Do you recall that little scandal also? It's true. Boys do better. And the feminists point to the standardized test results and yell foul. And the media reports this absurdity and lets them get away with it. For once, I'd like to see somebody, Dan Blather or Tom Brokejaw or somebody, ask, well, if it's discrimination, then why do the girls outscore the boys in every other subject? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, this stuff is crazy. Life is not fair. Guys die younger than gals do. If there's a snowstorm and power is out for thousands of homes at 3 a.m. in the morning, who is it that's trudging through the snow and fighting freezing cold winds to get the power back on? Is it a bunch of girls out there? No, it's a bunch of guys, and rightly so. And the men, when this is pointed out, they don't protest and say, oh, we need the government to change that and get the women out there to fix things. We don't do that. When men hear such stories, they take them as a source of pride because they enjoy being the ones to do the difficult work, to take care of our wives and daughters, mothers and sisters, because God instilled that role in us. Countless men have given their lives for their wives, and Jesus gave his life for us. And there's something in the whole picture, the role of protector and provider, that's natural. So, verse 5, Naomi survived her two sons and her husband. That's a sad and tragic story, and it gets worse in a foreign land, and you've lost your whole family. Verse 6, then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Now remember from verse 1 that there was a famine in the land of Israel, or the land of Canaan at this time. And Moab has a slightly different climate than does Judah, southern Israel, because as the air currents hit that wall of rock, they're forced upward. And these are air currents that have traveled a long way across the Mediterranean Sea, and when they're pushed upward, that squeezes out, it wrings out the moisture in the air. And so it tends to rain in Moab. The western part of Moab, the part closest to the Dead Sea, will get about 16 inches of rain a year compared to the extremely dry Judean desert that's like in perpetual drought where nothing grows. So she had heard that something's changed in Israel. Here's what Naomi considered. She heard while she was in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. If God was blessing the nation again, it would be because they had reached the end of one of their cycles of wickedness. And some deliverer, likely one of the great judges, brought about restoration through obedience and the blessing of God, through obedience to God and his blessing. Could one of those judges, could this have been just at the end of the time of Deborah, perhaps, or Gideon, or Jephthah, or Samson? It's interesting to try to fit the book of Ruth into the book of Judges, and perhaps we'll do more of that as we go on. But whoever it was, it seems that under some great deliverance, revival brought life back to the land. And isn't it a wonderful mindset Naomi exhibits here to acknowledge that the blessings of the land come from the hand of God? Now, God had this very direct intervention relationship with Israel, unlike he's had with other nations. And so when things went well or things went poorly, they saw it as a result of the hand of God. And that could sometimes be literal, that God himself saw to it that certain circumstances came to pass, or it could be figurative, that bad things happen to us as a result of cause and effect. We sin, and we get ourselves into trouble, and it's punishment from the hand of God. Not necessarily that God did this, but it's a long-term result of sin. And when we're blessed, we thank God for the goodness from his hand, not necessarily because he came and brought a buyer for our product, but because he's given us life and abilities and resources, and we could then utilize them and provide for ourselves and our family. But what a wonderful mindset Naomi has to acknowledge that these blessings of the land come from the hand of God. Because even when he's not directly intervening, all good things still come from the Lord. Verse 7. Therefore, she went out from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. In other words, Naomi rid herself of whatever she could not carry, packed her bags, and left the building that she had called home for all these years, over a decade. And on the way, they stopped, perhaps at the city's edge, maybe near the western border of Moab. In verse 8, Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me." So while the two daughters-in-law had accompanied her thus far, in the very beginning of the journey, now she's already asking them to depart. Perhaps Naomi thought she was safer traveling with two natives who knew how to speak the language. They spoke fluent Moabite. Perhaps she was simply afraid of traveling without them and thought she'd have their company for as far as possible. Perhaps she just wanted to put off the pain of saying goodbye. But at this point, she effectively says goodbye. "Go return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me." She was thankful to them for taking care of her sons as their wives and for their company and comfort to her, the widow. But now she places them in God's hands. What can she do for them? She can't care for them. She doesn't have the economic ability to do that. And she pronounces a blessing upon them, much as the patriarchs had pronounced upon their sons. So Naomi blesses her daughter-in-laws, "The Lord deal kindly with you." And notice the culture. She says, "Go return each to her mother's house." For women in ancient days, there were very few options. There was no living apart from your father's house or your husband's house or as a prostitute. That was pretty much it. Those were the economic options. Thus, if a man divorced his wife unjustly, he put her in a terrible, difficult situation, far more grim than that which we see today, even though today we all know divorce is a horrendous tragedy and very difficult to survive. But back then it was even worse. Verse 9. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. So Naomi says, may you return to your father's house, but then may another man seek to marry you. Those are her options. Now this scene tears at the heart for those who can empathize with these women. A wife and mother, bereaved, widowed, and then childless, parting with two widows, never to see them again, the wives of her lost sons. This is just a devastating time. The world is filled with hurt like this, and hurt that manifests itself in so many different and terrible ways. God warned Adam against sinning because sin leads to death, pain and death. And he warns us against sin for the same reason, because he loves us and he warns us to avoid unnecessary suffering, especially suffering at our own hands. That's the worst. No one ever suffers except as a result of someone who has disobeyed God. Verse 10, and they said to her, surely we will return with you to your people. They can't bear to separate. Now, what would they do? Where would they go? Perhaps their families, Naomi said, go to your father's house, but perhaps their families are not too happy with them, for they married into the nation of their enemy, taking husbands of the Israelites, the sworn enemies of the Moabites. Verse 11, but Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Uttered through tears, no doubt, a desperate woman knows that she cannot provide for herself, let alone for these two young ladies. Their lives have seen enough misfortune associated with Naomi. I cannot help you. Go. Verse 12. Turn back, my daughters. Go, for I am too old to have a husband. Why don't we read verse 13? If I should say I do have hope, and I have a husband tonight, and I should bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And now that is either a figure of speech or a misconception on Naomi's part. It's not that God came and killed her husband, then killed her kids. That's not what the Lord did. The text gives no indication of that. On the other hand, it is a common figure of speech to attribute things good or evil to the Lord in the Bible, because he is the source of everything. He's the source of everything, and we receive good or evil at his hand. He could deliver us from our pain, our tragedies. He could end our lives and bring us to heaven. So he could do that, but he doesn't. He restrains himself for certain very good reasons. And so if we receive a blessing, it's from the hand of the Lord. And if a terrible tragedy, it's from the hand of the Lord. Not that God did it, but he allowed it. He allows everything that occurs, he allows. Whether good, that people, a husband is faithful to his wife, God allows that. Or evil, God allows everything that happens, and he's the source of all life. So we rightly understand God as being the source of the circumstances in our lives. But it's crucial to understand the figure of speech so that we don't attribute wickedness to God. We don't make him the author of evil and the orchestrator of vulgarity, and we end up attributing all kinds of terrible things to the Lord. It's crucial that we could make that distinction. So Naomi's saying, verse 12, I'm too old to have a husband. It is through the man that the woman was provided for, and through him that she could care for her children. and such daughters-in-law as these, but Naomi had no such man. Today, life is different. Yes, it's changed, but it's also remained profoundly the same. Think of economically and culturally, socially, in our families. Women today can go out on their own, have careers, get degrees, raise families, all without a man. But in doing so, typically, the price they pay is the happiness of their children for themselves. Because typically, it doesn't work. It's a disaster. Single mom households try so desperately to keep it all together. Those moms love their kids as much as anything conceivable, and yet it doesn't work time after time after time. I recall I spoke at Crossroads up in Arvada. What's that, the old vineyard up there, Tom Stipe's church? I spoke at a youth group gathering. And afterward, a woman came up. She had one child who was in daycare. She's single, going for a degree. She's 2 years into a 4 or 5 year degree. She wants to have a career and buy a nice house and provide for her child. And those things all sound very admirable. And I asked her, what would you rather have? A good paycheck or a man who loves you? And she said, a man who loves me. And I asked her, your lifestyle, is it at all conducive to some guy ever laying eyes on you? You're so busy with school and daycare and the house and the job and the... There's no way that some guy is going to be able to latch onto you long enough to say, I do. And she never thought about that, never considered it. So I said, your life's goal that you're investing all your energy in for your son is not likely to get you where you want to go. It's not likely. And the reason I said that to her, I didn't know her, she's a stranger. But by then, I had met dozens of women that I had worked with at US West or Microsoft or McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company or PC Week who told all the same stories. All very successful, very wealthy, completely miserable because they don't have a home or a husband or a family, or they do have kids, but someone else is raising them because they got to be at work. And is it that we Christians don't want women to have careers and be successful? No, not at all. If a woman wants a career and invests herself and succeeds, fabulous. If she makes more money than Bill Gates ever dreamed of, that's all the better. Great. We don't begrudge anyone their independence, liberty, or success. But we get angry when women are lied to and told, you can only be happy if you have a career. You only be happy if you make a lot of money. You don't need a father for your children. When we hear those things, that angers us. Life has a double standard, and things are tough. And here, Naomi was thinking about reality for these two women and thinking you need to go back to your father's house. Economics have changed, but human nature has not. God made us to complement one another, especially in the realm of raising families. It was at the fall where God cursed the earth and the man and the woman. And as we studied in the book of Genesis, those curses were designed, they were crafted to make the man need the woman and the woman need the man. That was the purpose of those curses. Because prior to the fall, the earth just gave of its sustenance and man didn't have to struggle to survive. But after the fall, there was sin that would be in our relationships. And if we just lived off the fat of the earth, it took no effort to raise kids or provide a living, then what would happen to our marriages? What happens to people who win the lottery and all of a sudden they don't need one another because they've got millions of dollars? What do? They get divorced. I mean, that is so consistent. And people who become millionaires as rock stars or Hollywood, you know, movie stars, what's the standard factor in their lives is divorce across the spectrum because they no longer need one another. So at the fall, God gave a curse in such a way that we would need one another. We would have to struggle to provide a living. so that a man would need his wife and she would need her husband. Verse 14, then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And Orpah, when she kissed her goodbye. And she left to return to the house of her father. And Ruth clung to Naomi. And Naomi said to her, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. That's a little bit of an ugly thing that Naomi said. And the Bible does not whitewash the people who are the characters or the events and the things they did. If, to the extent I've read the Quran, Muhammad, you never hear anything bad that he does. You never see the grotesque things. Or when you do, it's said that it was okay, that he did it. The Bible's not like that. It has the flavor of realism. If the Jews are writing their book, why not make themselves look good? We saw in the book of Judges, smack dab in the middle of the book, how evil the nation was. Well, if they're making this stuff up, why make that up? Why not say, we were the best people on the earth, but the wicked people around us kept hurting us? Why constantly, for hundreds upon hundreds of pages, say how evil you are if it's not true? So Naomi here said to Ruth, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, entreat me not to leave you, or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. What a beautiful statement. One of the most beautiful verses in the whole Bible. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she gave up. She stopped speaking to her. Now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. We don't know how long the trip was, but a couple weeks it certainly could have been. And it happened when they had come to Bethlehem that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? They remembered her. Is this Naomi? But verse 20, so sad, she said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. Now, Naomi means pleasant, as your margin note might tell you, and Mara means bitter. And she has come back a hurt woman. She's lost everything in this life that meant anything to her. She did come back with her daughter-in-law. But you know, in a family, in a relationship, when you lose someone and you get someone else, you know, someone loses a child and gets another child, it's not like that replaces the hurt. It sort of covers it up a bit and it distracts your attention from the hurt through part of the day or the week or the year. But people have hurt and they get remarried or they get kids and they think, why am I still grieving? We can't fill in for that loss. It doesn't work. Life is not a dress rehearsal. This is real. Life ain't no dress rehearsal. And the things we do not only affect us in a real way, but for all eternity, us and those around us and the whole world. Who are the Gabor sisters and Zsa Zsa Gabor and the other one, Eva Gabor? And I think I heard an interview 15, 20 years ago with Eva, I think. And they were talking about all her marriages. And if I recall, she had 8 at that time, 8 marriages. And what surprised me in the interview is the grief that she related that she went through with each divorce. And she said, it was like losing a child, and I cried for a year. I would have never thought that. I would have thought this is just some Hollywood actress, singer. I don't even know what she is. Just some Hollywood witch. And what does she care? She's just going through guys. You know, but marriage is real. It's not make-believe. It's not just a piece of paper. Because if it was just a piece of paper, people who don't even care about God, and they don't even care about morality, they don't even believe about right and wrong, they wouldn't be devastated when a marriage fails. But they are. So even in their disobedience and rebellion, they affirm the truth of God. Relationships are the most powerful things in the universe. And the most important thing in all existence is relationship within the Godhead, between God and us, between us, ourselves, and one another. The most important things. Even when you get down below the level of human beings, a vertical relationship with God and a horizontal relationship with other humans, and then you go to animals, pets. You can't have much of a relationship with a fish, but there are animals that God has given an ability to relate to us, like a dog or a cat, that people have grown attachment to. And there's a love, and it's two ways. And relationships, even at that level, are so much more important than so many other things. People who have a pet that they love, and if the pet is hurt or in danger, they'd sacrifice a brand new car to save a $50 dog. That's common among people who love pets. It just gives an example of how powerful relationships are. And so here's Naomi, and she's back home and back with friends and family members she hadn't seen in so long, back in her own homeland and with her daughter-in-law, and with the opportunity to start a new life, but things did not look good for her. Things looked very bad. And when people lose loved ones in their grief, and others try to encourage them and get them through it, and they say, it will be better, things will get better. And they often think, I don't want things to get better. I don't want to be happy without my loved one. I don't want it. And that's part of a grieving process. And Naomi was here going through that. So she said, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? And it depends on your theology. The more natural understanding of that, superficially on the surface of the text, is a Calvinist view that God killed her husband, then killed her children. That is the apparent meaning of the text. And you'd have to go beyond that to see the figures of speech and the words of a grieving widow to understand in the Bible that God does not kill the children of his children. He doesn't do that to them as normal course of business. In the flood, he killed a lot of people and their children. But when wickedness happens, it happens as a result of sin, not as a result of God. Verse 22, so Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest.